about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring John Huber, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Silver Creek, the crown jewel of Western Spring Creeks. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and your email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with John Huber about Silver Creek, the crown jewel of Western Spring Creeks. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as an unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Wetluck, one of fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kick boats, I'm convinced that the Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to www.bigskyinflatables.com. That's bigskyinflatables.com. Before we introduce John, I'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under John's section that says, "Click here to register for their drawing." Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of John's book, Lessons of Fair-Sized Creek, 12 Ways to Catch More Trout on the Fly. And here's how you can win John's book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question will be something about that we talked about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win John's book, Lessons of Fair-Sized Creek, 12 Ways to Catch More Trout on the Fly. Our guest tonight is John Huber. John runs Peekaboo Angler in the Silver Creek Valley of Idaho. His 25 years of fishing the creek, coupled with working alongside the Purdy family, whose ancestors homesteaded the same ground the family farms and ranches today. His fly fishing background is rooted in decades of fishing and guiding the salt and freshwater. His career in the industry has taken him all over the world. He has spent years in the Everglades and Caribbean and decades in the Rockies. John hosted Plum TV's Sun Valley Show for several seasons, and he's also the author of Fly Fisher's Guide to Oregon and Lessons of Fair-Sized Creek. He has written for Big Sky Journal, Big Life Magazine, and Fly Fisherman Magazine, the latter putting him in their 40th anniversary issue and timeline for his pioneering take on the sport. John helped open the door to Scorpion Reef for fly fishers and also wrote about snow trout of the Himalayas, all while learning to unlock the nuances of his home water, Silver Creek. Silver Creek, Idaho is certainly known among fly anglers as one of the pinnacle and sacred waters in the sport. A technical dry fly fishery that forces the best out of anglers is what keeps John in Idaho. I never get enough of the challenges the creek throws at me. I love the constant humbling and big rewards. I also love the creek for the quietude and effect it has on an angler's soul. It is a special place for trout anglers around the world. He lives in Peekaboo, Idaho, population 85, because it's as close to the creek as a person can live. His commute is 2 blocks to Peekaboo Angler, where you can find him most of the summer season. Well, John, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Roger. I appreciate you having me.
Well, great to have you. And still trying to work our way through this winter.
So, it's been a long winter in Idaho, for sure.
Yeah, it's winter up there, too. Yeah, yeah.
We're darn near 200% snowpack this year.
Yeah, I was checking out places to stay in Belize again last night. it was pretty nice down there. And place to warm your bones and fall in the water, and it's 80 degrees. You know?
Without question. Without question.
But we're going to talk about a different place tonight. And as said in your introduction, place near and dear to your heart, Silver Creek in Idaho. And, I remember hearing about Silver Creek when I was just a kid learning how to fly fish. And it kind of was one of those places, well, I don't know if I'll ever go there because I don't know if I'll ever catch a trout there. So maybe we can kind of sort that out for people, because I'm sure a lot of other people are a little intimidated by that fishery.
Without question, Roger. I mean, I certainly was.
I
know my first time down here, it took a little nudging from my friends to break away from what I knew to go to the great unknown of Silver Creek and see what I did know, actually. So
test your abilities. Absolutely. Well, let's start at the beginning. First of all, we've got an international audience, so let's tell, if you could tell folks where Silver Creek is, you know, in your
Absolutely.
Great state of Idaho.
Silver Creek is in south central Idaho. We're about 45 minutes south of the Sun Valley Ski Resort. We're about 2 hours east of Boise, and maybe 4.5 hours west of Salt Lake City.
Okay.
So we're on the Rocky Mountains deep. We're kind of in that sagebrush area, kind of on the where the mountains are transitioning into the rolling sagebrush hills, and so we're fishing all that really nutrient-rich water that you would get from, you know, Rocky Mountain snowfall.
And what's the best way to get there? Where do you fly into?
Most people, we either go to Boise and rent a vehicle and make the drive up here. It's 2 hours door-to-door from Peekaboo Angler to the Boise Airport, and it's a gorgeous drive on top of that. And then other people will fly into the Haley Airport, which is called the Sun Valley Airport, which is just up the road from us, 20 miles.
Okay.
So very, very common for people to come here, stay in the Sun Valley area, and come down to Silver Creek to fish.
Plenty of places to stay there?
Tons of places.
Yeah.
As far as hotels, you know, you have all the resort stuff up north of us, and then, of course, we have lots of camping, and you can camp right on the creek, actually.
Oh, really?
Okay. It's unimproved camping, but it's you sure can't beat the scene when you wake up in the morning.
And wow, yeah, that's unusual.
Throw your waders on. Go.
Well, tell us about why this is so special to you, why Silver Creek is so special to you.
You know, Roger, for me, I think first and foremost, you kind of said it in the beginning of the show there, it's the quietude for me. You know, when you have that image in your mind of fly fishing and rising fish, and part of those images, I think, in people's mind is sitting in the shade next to the river and contemplating life. And honestly, I don't think there's a better place than Silver Creek for that, just because it is very quiet. Things move very slow there, and you kind of get caught up in that slowness of it, and it slows you down, and it slows your mind down. On top of that, you just have this incredible, incredible fishery that can be as difficult as you want to make it, or you can kind of make it a little simpler if you want to. But in either case, it's a very rewarding fishery. I don't think I've fished anywhere that, for me, is more rewarding for, you know, that humbling that you get. You know, it's very different day to day. I could go out there and have just a world-class day as an angler one day, go back with almost the identical conditions the next day, and get skunked and sit there and scratch your head going, what was the difference today? What was the difference? And it's just that puzzle. It's that ongoing puzzle that Silver Creek presents.
I have that problem on almost every piece of water I go to.
Yeah. But, you know, Roger, with that said, one of the joys of Silver Creek is it makes everything else easier.
Oh, does it? Okay, good.
The skill set.
I better get up there quick.
Yeah, there you go. You know, the skill set you'll take away from the creek will make your home waters suddenly seem, they'll make more sense to you. You'll start fishing just at a little higher level, even on other rivers, because the creek beats it out of you. Whether you want to learn it or not, the creek's going to force you to learn it if you want to be successful.
Yeah, it's either learn how to fish or go have a beer, one of the two.
Uh-huh.
And if you're up there to fish, then you better start learning. Can you kind of give us a tour of the fishable parts of Silver Creek? You know, where the fishing starts, how long it goes, how the stream changes, and so forth.
Yeah, the river itself it's not a very long river. It is, I think it's, last I checked, it was most fish per mile in the state of Idaho, but it's not a lot of miles. The place that people generally think of when they think of Silver Creek is the Nature Conservancy Silver Creek Preserve. And that's kind of, for the public, that's about as high up into the system as you can fish. Above that, you're really fishing in little tiny tributaries.
Okay.
But the creek itself forms on the Nature Conservancy, where most of those little spring creeks come together and form Silver Creek proper. So the Silver Creek Conservancy, the Nature Conservancy has at least a couple miles of water to fish. There's a walk and wade section in the Nature Conservancy and a float tube section in the Conservancy, and those are walk and wade only and float tube only. So the creek's really broken down into two different kind of access points throughout the Nature Conservancy. And then as you move down from the Nature Conservancy downstream, the first property you would come to is the Purdy's, the Kilpatrick Pond area. And the Kilpatrick Pond area is private property, but because the bridge at the Nature Conservancy crosses the river there, a lot of anglers will access onto the private property there, and they're legal as long as they stay in the water. And most of that is float tube with fins, and most anglers will float down. The current's very slow. It's almost a stillwater fishery in that area. And then they'll kick back with fins to get back up to their vehicle at the bridge. A major kind of a calabatus area just because of the stillwater nature of it. And then as you go down below the spillway that forms that kind of stillwater section, you go back into the free-flowing Silver Creek that runs through the Purdy property.
Back up a second. I'm
sure.
Looking at a map, and I see Highway 20. Is that the bridge you're talking about?
Off of Highway 20 is the access road into the Nature Conservancy, and that is the bridge that I would be talking about. Purdy property terminates, that section terminates at the Highway 20 bridge.
Okay.
So then once you move down below the Highway 20 bridge, now you're going into another small section that's owned by the Purdy's, but they let the public on that section. And you don't have to ask or anything. It's just open to the public. And then from there downstream, it's Fish and Game. Idaho Fish and Game owns what is called Silver Creek West and Silver Creek East. Locally, we call the first access the Willows and the second access Point of Rocks. And those are really nice, long, contiguous areas. You can actually hike from one access all the way up to the other, and it's just tons of water. And then moving down from Point of Rocks or Silver Creek East, you would end up going into private property again for several miles, and then you would come back out onto Purdy ground again, where they also allow public access, and that's the Peekaboo Bridge area, we call that. Also kind of the epicenter of the brown gray catch that kicks off our season. And then from Peekaboo Bridge down, it's private property back there, and the character starts changing, and the creek starts tumbling out into the desert from there. And there is one or two public access points down in the desert. But that area, although it's Silver Creek, it doesn't fish like we... It's not the Silver Creek people have in their minds. It's more of a freestone-looking river down there.
So the Silver Creek that people have... The picture they have in their minds is up in the Nature Conservancy.
Yeah, and that's primarily. That's flat Spring Creek water. There's not a riffle, not a rock. It's just glassed over, meandering kind of meadow water. But it's very.
And how long is that?
There's at least a couple miles of river miles in there.
To fish, okay.
Yeah.
And no floating other than a float tube. No drift boat fishing.
No, there's actually no place you could actually launch a boat on Silver Creek, just the nature of it. It's a very small creek. So float tubing sections are defined by your butt has to be wet. If you're in a boat, your butt is dry as far as Fish and Game is concerned. So But once you drop below the Highway 20 bridge, you can legally fish from a boat on that downstream water. But, again, the nature of the river down there is very narrow, very kind of twisting and turning, and if you come upon a waiting angler, you've ruined that person's day if you went through in a boat. So most people stick to float tubes and just walk and wade fishing.
Okay.
And really, those
okay.
are the most effective ways to fish anyhow.
So what are the laws in Idaho for access? You said as long as you're in the river, you're okay in private.
Yeah.
Is it like
Idaho,
Montana?
Idaho is, yeah, it's high water mark to high
water
mark. And, you know, the historical high water mark. And it has to be a navigable stream. And they define that by being able to float a 6-inch log down the stream. If you can do that, then it's considered navigable. And as far as fences in Idaho, if they're posted with red blazes every 50 feet, you can't cross the fence. Or if it's obvious ag land behind the fence, you can't
mm-hmm.
cross the fence. So,
okay.
But yes, once you're in the water, you can float through private property.
Okay. Okay. Question. That's from Craig in Portland, Oregon. He says, "I know that Silver Creek has a reputation for being highly technical. Is it possible for an angler passing through this area to find success fishing without a float tube, assuming you have reasonable skills? What I mean is, does someone have to spend several days on Silver Creek figuring it out?"
No, I would say no to that. If it's somebody that has some experience, I would say that has a healthy fly box. You know, we are very mayfly rich here, and well, again, if you don't have the healthy fly box, we're on the river, so we can certainly get the flies in the hands of the angler. But the nature of the creek, obviously, yes, the more time you spend here, the more consecutive days you string together, the more you're going to kind of understand it. The blessing of being a local here on Silver Creek is we can fish the hatches, and you can time your fishing to those hatches. So for somebody passing through on one day, it would be hard to make a judgment call. Let's
yeah.
say that I like Silver Creek or don't like Silver Creek, or that was rewarding, mm-hmm. or maybe it's too hard or not. That could be dependent on a lot of factors. If the wind's blowing, if you know which hatches come off, you know, how strong do they come off? Silver Creek is very much about right place and right time. And if you hit that river when there's a good amount of insect activity, you're going to see a lot of rising fish and have a lot of opportunity to catch those fish. Now, just because they're rising in mass doesn't make them easier to catch, but you have targets, and it gives you that opportunity to kind of start unlocking things. And
yeah, I think there was
yeah.
a YouTube video I was watching this afternoon on Silver Creek, and a guy hooked up with a fish. But I can't remember what hatch it was, but there was a hatch going on. There were so many bugs in front of the camera. You know, you keep seeing these bugs fly in front of the camera as he's fishing. You know, it's like, wow, you know,
yeah,
really
absolutely
sick hatch.
Incredible. My guess is that's probably footage from the brown drake hatch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really our first big hatch of the season here.
Yeah. Another question going back to the Kilpatrick Bridge. Chuck in Sacramento asks, he says, what are the fishing restrictions below Kilpatrick? And maybe you can just reiterate that.
Yeah.
Is it okay to fish, but, you know, do the private land? Is the fishing better, worse, or same below Kilpatrick Bridge?
I would say that the Nature Conservancy section and the Double R Fishing Club section, which is that area below Kilpatrick Bridge, I'd say they're very, very compatible fisheries as far as, you know, the hatches pretty much come off contiguously through those sections at the same time, same bugs. Very similar fisheries in that regard. Once you get downstream of Highway 20, that's when you see a pretty significant change in that fishery, not in necessarily the look of the fishery, but the insect hatches become a little less intense, and we start getting into more of a hopper, mouse fishing, streamer fishing opportunity downstream looking for big trophy fish. And there are mornings, though, and evenings where you do get trico and PMD action, and those things are cyclical. We, you know, 10 years ago we had fantastic trico fishing in those areas, and it dwindled off, and in the last 2 years it started really ramping back up. So, you know, there's a cyclical nature to everything on the creek here. But that area down below Kilpatrick, again, just to reiterate, it is private property. The public can access it. They just have to stay in the high water mark.
Okay. Need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Silver Creek a bit more. But you say at Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize, you're only a step away from fly fishing for tarpon, permit, and bonefish. In fact, you may see permit tailing right off the deck of your cabana. At Tarpon Key Lodge, you fish the tides, not the clock, and that makes all the difference in the world. You can fish the lagoon for tarpon or the flats for permit and bonefish. It's your choice. Tarpon Key Lodge is located on a private island just 30 minutes from Placentia. You can fish the world-class guides like Charles Leslie Sr., or make it a do-it-yourself trip and take one of the kayaks out and spend the day alone. If you're looking for that Grand Slam, Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize is the place to go. Book your next adventure now. Visit www.tarponkey.com. That's TARPONCAYE.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with John Huber about Silver Creek, the crown jewel of Western Spring Creeks. If you'd like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately. We'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. So, John, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world. So tell us about your business up there and what's happening in Idaho.
Well, currently I run Peekaboo Angler on behalf of the Purdy family here. The Purdy family has their ancestors settled here in the valley. So, I think 2 years ago there were four generations working on the ranch here. So I have been kind of tasked by the Purdys to really bring back that sporting tradition to Silver Creek. Bud Purdy, who was the patriarch of the family, passed away a few years ago, and he was among the five people that Ernest Hemingway considered his best friends, you know, guys that he trusted. And we have a very, very tight connection with that Hemingway story and history. We have some of his books here in the store on display, some of his guns here on display. So really, you know, when Sun Valley started as a resort, you know, with Ernest Hemingway and Gary Cooper and these stars would come here, and really they would ski in Sun Valley and obviously enjoy the lodge and the restaurants up there, but when they went to hunt and fish, they came to Peekaboo, and they came to see Bud Purdy and some of the guides down here. There really was a very strong sporting tradition. And then as the resort grew, that kind of started moving up north, and really Ketchum and Sun Valley became the epicenter of that. And we've just really tried hard to bring back this sporting tradition to the creek, even though we're, you know, almost an hour south of Sun Valley. You know, we knew there would be a demand to have a fly shop and an outfitting business on this particular river. So, you know, we were warned, don't try to open an outfitting business outside of Sun Valley without the foot traffic, but, you know, we took on what we call the Montana model, where there's plenty of lodges that freestand on rivers. And So we decided to kind of do that, and so here we are. We're on year five now. We have a very old outfitting license for the state of Idaho, so we can guide many, many waters. We also do duck hunting and upland hunting. So we're busy. And this time of year, we're basically spending all our days getting ready for the coming season, which opening day here is May 27th this coming year.
Okay, so, that was a good question to answer right there. Is there a season to the fishing the river?
Yes, yep. So we are May 20, well, it's always the last Saturday of May is the opener, which is, for us down here, that's like Christmas. It's celebrated by the anglers in the Sun Valley area. You can come to Silver Creek on opening day, and there'll be hundreds of people down here, even though maybe 10% of them are actually angling. A lot of anglers are just here to, you know, it's like Christmas morning. It's just tradition to come to Silver Creek, and, you know, the Nature Conservancy has a free barbecue, and Peekaboo Angler has a free barbecue, and people kind of bounce around and say hello to their friends, and it's just a celebration of fly fishing. And then our season really kicks in with the brown drakes there that first week of June, and then we roll all the way through the fall. The fishing closes on the upstream section. Everything upstream of Highway 20 closes the end of November. And then everything else downstream of Highway 20 closes the end of February. So yesterday was the last day until the opener here on May 27th.
Okay. And what's your website address for Peekaboo Angler?
We are www.peekabooangler.com or .net, either one. And
okay.
Peekaboo is spelled P-I-C-A-B-O.
Okay, so that what was that gal's name? Peekaboo Street?
Peekaboo Street, yes, spelled identical.
She named after Peekaboo?
She's named after the town. The story I was told was she named herself after the town of Peekaboo.
Oh, she did. Okay, she's from that area?
Yes. I believe she's from the Triumph area between Haley and Ketchum.
Yeah, I mean, that was many years ago, but I still remember such a,
yeah.
It's a catchy name. Catchy.
Yeah, but I believe she lives in, I think she's in Park City now or somewhere in Utah. She's one of the ski resorts over there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, good. Okay, we had another question from Chuck in Sacramento again. What about fishing the upper part of the reserve where there's many small streams merge? Is it worth the time and energy?
It absolutely is. Just it's a little more exploratory up there. There's certainly fewer anglers up in some of the tribs. As you get upstream, really the main trib on the Nature Conservancy is the Stalker Creek. That's the one that's accessible to the public and open to fishing. There's a little bit of Loving Creek that is accessible. It's one of the tribs that's downstream. That's actually about halfway down through the Nature Conservancy property. But those little creeks they hold just as big a fish as the main body of water. They're a little more secretive in there. The casting can be a little, everything's tighter and, you know, it's very willow-lined and just very tight quarters. It's not an easy place to fish up there, even not so much that in the sense it's not easy like the rest of the creek. It's just not easy in that you're just in such tight quarters when you start getting up into the tributaries and trying to approach those fish in that glassy water, you know, through the bushes and things like that is a little self-defeating sometimes.
Can you actually cast up there, or is it more like kai sticking?
In places you can. You can certainly, especially where the confluences of the tributaries come into Silver Creek, those are generally more open areas and really fun places to fish.
So what is the... this next question you'll probably answer. Terry in Portland, Oregon. He says, what is the best way to fish this creek? Do you wade it, float to it? The area around the preserve is easy to walk around, but always has lots of people, making catching fish very difficult. The area of the creek near Peekaboo has limited access and is muddy in spots. What's the best way to fish this? Which portion do you like to fish and what time of day? So lots of questions there.
Yeah, honestly, Roger, I fish the whole creek top to bottom. And I can't say I have a favorite section. It just kind of varies from, you know, the time of the season. You know, obviously we start downstream early season, make our way up, you know, midsummer into the conservancy, fishing the hatches. And then as we get later into the summer, we start progressing back downstream with hoppers and mahogany duns and things like that into the fall. So, you know, and the difference between walk and wade and float tubing, that's really a personal choice. Float tubing is a great way to cover a lot of water. So if you're hopper fishing and you want to just blind fish to the banks, you know, and throw big foam hoppers up under the grass and stuff, using a float tube is a good way to cover a lot of ground, or water. And, you know, the wade fishing or stalking the fish from the banks is also an excellent way to do it because you can really, if you're careful, you can approach those fish very close as long as you stay out of their eyesight. You can get very close to them and have nice close presentations and really look at their body language, and you can really read what they're doing by doing that. So I really like both. I do both often, and that includes day or night.
Okay. Question from Douglas in Seattle. He says, how can the flow in Silver Creek be increased? Second part, what else can be done to reduce the silt load to the creek? Are those issues that you have there?
You know, that's going to be a long answer to that. But what can you do to increase the flows? Snowpack. You know, it's a spring creek. It's fed by an aquifer. We need to have that aquifer full. Years like this with 200% snowpack will help that creek immensely. So even though it is spring-fed, that spring water is typically coming from the neighboring river, the Bigwood, and the seepage underground from that river returns to the surface a few miles down valley and becomes Silver Creek.
Nobody taking water out of the creek above?
Well, the farmers historically pull water out of the creek. There are a couple head gates with a few very small canals, and there are a few pumps in the river, and you know those are water rights that have been established for over 100 years, so that's not new. You know, regarding the silt load, you know, that one, that's a very touchy subject for anglers here on Silver Creek. I can say this. Silt is part of Silver Creek. It always has been. It always will be. It moves. You'll have some sections that could be silty for decades, and that could move downstream with a big flushing by a couple years of a big snowpack. But also, people need to keep in mind, when people think of Silver Creek, they see it in the spring, the summer, and the fall. And a lot of what we hear on Silver Creek is, you know, we need to protect this fishery by cooling the water, by removing silt, by making the river deeper. Well, this river's had silt in it, and it's had shallow spots for 100 years, and the fish have been, there are areas where the fish prefer that. And if you look at the creek holistically, and I mean taking the winter months into account, there are times when we get so cold here, the river will actually ice all the way over. So when these fish have an opportunity to warm up in the winter, those areas of silt that are shallow become really important for these fish to be able to pull up in there on a zero-degree day in the sunlight and be able to kind of bask in the sun on that dark bottom. And it really helps preserve that fishery through the wintertime. So people talk about silt here like it's a bad word sometimes, and it's not always the case. There is definite silt loads above the headgates. Nobody will argue that. That's where, you know, where the irrigation headgates are that backs the river up a little bit, and it does drop silt in there. The ranchers have been proactive about removing silt out of those areas, and each year they try to do a little bit more to remedy those areas. But in the main body of the creek where it's free-flowing and you have that silt, that is part of the system. And a lot of the insects are dependent on it, trichos and brown drakes especially are silt dwellers, and they need that. And it's an important part of our fishery.
Does that make wading tough in those areas?
It does make wading tough in those areas, and that's where a float tube becomes your best friend. You know, that's where, even though you're touching bottom, you still have the stability of having that float tube around you.
Yeah, yeah. Why did the, I'm kind of backing up here, but why did the Nature Conservancy decide to protect that area?
You know, that was brought to light by Jack Hemingway, Ernest's son. Jack loved fishing down there. He fished with his father down here when he was a kid. The Sun Valley Company owned that property. I believe the railroad owned it first, and then I believe the Sun Valley Company purchased it. And I think the Sun Valley Company wanted to sell, and Jack Hemingway realized this would be an opportunity for the Nature Conservancy to step in. He was a part of the Nature Conservancy by that time.
Oh.
So he acted as a go-between. You know, I think this was in the 70s, and he acted as a go-between between the ranchers, like the Purdy's that have been here for 100 years, and the sportsmen that were arriving here. And he was able to really get the Nature Conservancy's message to the ranchers that they weren't here to change farming practices or to demand that cattle be taken out of the valley. They were here to work with the farming and ranching community. And it's been incredibly successful, in large part because of Jack Hemingway.
Great. Good story there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, another question, Tim in Salem, Oregon. He said, recent long-term drought has affected many of our rivers. Last fall, we drove through the area of Silver Creek, but we were concerned about water temps and what looked like low water to us. Has the winter improved the situation any?
The winter has immensely helped with our situation. I was told anecdotally about a month ago our snowpack around the 4,000, 5,000 foot mark was up to 500%. So
wow.
That doesn't have a huge effect on the creek, but it does, you know, help fill that aquifer and saturate that ground. So when the runoff does come, you know, hopefully we'll see a big spike in that aquifer. As far as temperatures last year, we actually didn't have any issues. And the year before, they did up on the Nature Conservancy. They closed for a few hours in the morning until the oxygen levels came up. But last year was really the first full season with the Kilpatrick Pond project in place, and that was the area that was most affected by the silt. That was, you know, that large area right below the Nature Conservancy where it had filled in over the years till it was very shallow, and the Purdy's went in there with the blessing of Fish and Game in the county, and they removed that silt, and dug that area out, and now the water coming out of that section is colder than the water coming in, and that has greatly affected the downstream reaches of Silver Creek, and really in a positive way, really affected the hatches, and you can really see the changes happening way downriver from that area because of that project. The timing of that project was absolutely impeccable.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, good. Yeah, it looks like Colorado's, you know, getting snow too this year, all the Rockies.
Yeah, the West is looking good. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, so that's always a good thing. We need that water. Well, you know, of course, Colorado needs the water so that we can send it down to Las Vegas. And little jab there. I read a book a few years ago called Down the Colorado, and it traces the Colorado River with the water rights all the way down to the Gulf of California, and it's really something. I mean, it's really quite the story, and a good read if you've ever been on or involved with the Colorado River, but super important water source for a lot of reasons. But Jake in Boise just wants to know what your thoughts are, and based on what you just said, he wants to know, you know, how will the Conservancy fish this year? Sounds like it'll fish pretty good.
I expect an outstanding year. I mean, we had 100% snowpack last year. We're darn near 200% this year. That's the first time in decades, or at least a good decade, that I can remember being over 100% on consecutive years. And there is residual retention in that aquifer, I believe, from previous years. So if the more of these 100% snowpack years we can string together, certainly the better the fishing is going to be. Granted, with that said, you know, there's been lots of people talking about, you know, Silver Creek and the Nature Conservancy and the fishing being off, and a lot of that I think was due to the pond project. And I don't think it really made the fishing. I think it changed the fishing. It changed some of the areas the fish would sit in and lay in, and it affected the fish, maybe not in the most positive way, but at the same time, it didn't do away with our fishery. I think people just got used to a certain group of fish sitting in a certain corner every year, year in and year out, because there isn't a spring runoff on that river. It rarely changed. And that pond project is one of the first things that actually made a change in that river in a lot of years. So it was just kind of an adjustment period for a lot of anglers.
What species do you target?
Browns and rainbows.
And rainbows, okay.
Very, very healthy population of both, and really
they're
a wonderful
kind of
fishery.
Throughout,
they really are kind of mixed throughout. Certainly, the higher up in the system you go, the more rainbows you'll find, and as you drop down into the lower part of Silver Creek, you start getting into very large browns.
Yeah, and what's the average size of a fish in Silver Creek, and what's a trophy?
You know, about the biggest brown I've seen come out of the river is in that 30-inch class. Catching a brown trout over 20 inches is absolutely doable every day on Silver Creek, and especially if you pursue those fish. Rainbows in Silver Creek, 24 is a very large rainbow in that creek, although once every few years somebody gets a monster. You know, in that 26, 28-inch class maybe. But normally the rainbows, you know, if you're catching them in the 15 to 22-inch range, that's the norm.
Oh, wow.
There's lots of the, you know, there's smaller age classes of fish in there as well that you catch plenty of, especially if you're fishing to pods of fish. You know, and that kind of begs the question of those fisheries there. Silver Creek really is two very distinct fisheries, Roger, in the sense that you can fish the hatches, fish the pods of feeding fish, or you can go actively hunt giant trophy fish, but very different techniques.
Okay, maybe we can talk about that in a few minutes. What equipment should you bring down in the way of, you know, what weight rods?
You know, I'm 4-weight.
Okay.
I use a 4-weight for pretty much everything on Silver Creek. I often will go to a 5 for hoppers, you know, maybe go up to a 7 for mouse fishing at night. But the 4 is kind of the all-around tool on Silver Creek, and we also really fish soft rods. That is probably the single most important piece of gear you could bring to Silver Creek if you were going to bring a dedicated rod or or you want it to come to Silver Creek with every advantage you could possibly have as a fly angler, having a slow action, soft rod is going to pay off for you. And it's really because you need that flex, you need that shock absorption the soft rod provides, because we fish such light tippets here. So you're fishing to large fish with tiny flies with long light tippets, and when you hook these fish, having that soft rod can be the difference in landing fish and not landing fish. Just because you get the shock absorption. Just the rod is protecting the line. The rod is taking the stress of the fight instead of the line taking so much of it.
The question from Jim in Cincinnati, he wanted to know about leader length for dry fly and nymph fishing, and also wanted to include in that, you know, you just mentioned tippet. So talk about what your setup is.
We typically for fishing the mayfly hatches early season, and by early season I mean everything before 4th of July. You can really get away with 5X and 6X tippets, and your leader length, 9 to 10 feet, is generally plenty. As we get later into the summer, the fish have seen more and more anglers. You know, this is crystal clear, flat water. The fish pretty much can see everybody. So things start getting a little more tricky. They start getting a little more spooked, or they've been hooked before, and all of a sudden your leader length needs to be extended into that 12-foot range, and your tippet sizes need to be in that 6X, 6.5. We sell 7X here at Peekaboo Angler, Roger. I can count on one hand how many times I've used it in 25 years, and we won't sell 8X on this creek just because you're, at that point, decorating fish, so we refuse to do it. And as far as nymphing, 5X is the norm. We do very little of it, to be honest.
Right.
So I imagine whatever just nymphing techniques you're using on your freestone rivers and tippets would be compatible for this.
Okay. And let's talk about food and flies there. You've been mentioning a bunch of different hatches.
Yes.
So do you have like a schedule of hatches to be found on Silver Creek?
Without question. You know, the season really starts very strong in June with PMD and betas on the upstream section. And, you know, then the hatch herd around Idaho is the brown drake here. And that historically has always been second week of June. The last three seasons with our low water and our light winters, that hatch has come off right at opening day. Luckily, we've been able to catch it every year. That hatch is only about 2 weeks long. The PMD and the betas thing upstream lasts a lot longer. You know, it'll go all the way to the 4th of July, really, and into July. You know, ants and beetles always play a part in that time frame. And then as we kind of get into the heat of summer, now we start transitioning into the trico action, your damsels, your hoppers, your afternoon calibatus, your evening betas. You can still find trickles of PMDs during these times. You can go to the sloughs and stillwater sections and obviously fish that calibatus. And then as we move into the fall, we start getting into the fall betas, just a much tinier blue-winged olive, and we get into the mahogany dun, which is one of our favorite hatches here because it just dumbs the fish down. For some reason, these fish get smarter and smarter all season long, and then all of a sudden the mahogany dun shows up in October, and they just eat it with abandon.
So, is that another big, is the mahogany a big?
It's not a very big fly. It's the equivalent, it's pretty much a PMD size insect, that 16 to 14 size, but just the mahogany color. Just if you were to paint a PMD mahogany, that's what it would look like.
So it's not the size that's attracting them. Something else.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a signal of, hey, this is your last good feed.
It probably is. They're probably
coming,
feeling the water temperatures drop by that time, and they probably start realizing that time's a waste
up.
And daylight hours are getting short. Yep.
Yeah. And the brown drakes, are those the same size flies as green drakes, large?
Yes, very large.
Yeah.
That's one of the funnest parts of that hatch is it's counterintuitive to see that large of an insect on Silver Creek. Especially for people that fish it all year and they fish all these tiny little mayflies. To see this giant sailboat coming down the river, and it's one of the few bugs that even the giant brown trout will come out from hiding to come eat that thing in the evening.
Steak.
Anglers can get great shots, great dry fly shots at huge brown trout during that hatch.
And this is kind of this question from Pete. He says, what's the best time of year to fish dry flies? And we really haven't got into that, but that's pretty much what Silver Creek is known for, its dry fly fishing.
Yeah, without question. Without question. You know, I call it the greatest dry fly fishery there is. I mean, it really, you're almost, I'm not a purist, Roger, but on this particular river, you're almost doing yourself a disservice by focusing on numbers and trying to catch fish by nymphing them up. And, you know, there's a quality to this fishery where you can go out in the morning before the hatches, knowing you're getting out there before the hatches, and being able to sit there in that quietude and wait and watch these fish, watch what we, you know, we call it the show, you know, watch the show begin where, you know, here comes a bug, here comes another one, you know, you see them coming up, flying up out of the grass, you know, in that morning light, and flying to the river, and you start seeing the intensity of it growing, and pretty soon the little fish are up, and then the medium-sized fish are up, and then the big ones are up, and to go sit there early morning and run nymphs through all that water, what's going to happen is the hatch is going to start and the fish aren't going to come up. And you're going to scratch your head going, I don't get it. There's no fish here. But, in fact, the fish were put down before they had an opportunity to stage up on the hatches. And that's very common. So your patience here pays. You know, people talk about going to a river, and the first thing you should do when you approach a run is sit there for 5 minutes and look at the water and see if there's rising fish and look for insects and just kind of get a lay of the land. On Silver Creek, you can do that for an hour or more. So, and I encourage it. You know, it really gives you great perspective on the fishery and just makes it that much more rewarding.
So the pattern of fishing is basically, if no hatch is going on, sit down and have a chat, huh? With your buddy.
Well,
and wait,
not
huh?
necessarily. I mean, you can, there is opportunity even in the morning to throw hoppers or you know, go find a big cut bank and run a big streamer under there for a giant brown or even a crack of dawn mouse out there. And if you get there early enough, you can sometimes even catch, you know, trico, the end of the trico hatch at the crack of dawn, you know, before the spinnerfall even starts, you know, before the sun breaks the horizon. Mm-hmm. There's things to do, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with sitting on the bank of Silver Creek and watching the moose walk by with the birds singing and fish just starting to rise. And it's inspiring. It's absolutely breathtaking. It's an amazing experience.
Well, we'll get back to the mouse in a minute here. We got a question on the internet about sure. mouse fishing, so we'll come back to that. But another question that came in on the internet is Chris in Farmington, Utah, wants to know what time of year is best to fish the creek. Based upon what you said, pretty much open to close.
Yeah, it's kind of what you want to do, what you like to do. I always suggest that your more novice or beginner angler either targets very early season or targets that trico hopper time because you know, the hopper fishing, if you can just get good casts to the bank, if you can just get the casting down and get foam hoppers to the bank, you have a very good chance to catch a very big fish on Silver Creek. And the trico action just brings up such huge pods of fish that running your fly through there, you have a good chance to get some fish. May not be the biggest fish in the creek, but you have good chances to get fish to eat your fly there. The more experienced anglers, you know, really any time of the year, you know, they're always going to find something to do. And just kind of going back just real quick, Roger, when we talk about that downtime on Silver Creek, often when I go to the creek, if I'm not finding hatches or the hatch didn't come off in the, you know, as much bulk as I wanted, it's not enough intensity to bring the big fish up or any fish up, or maybe the weather just went south on you. Silver, the Nature Conservancy has two areas where there's groundwater coming straight up onto the property there, and it creates sloughs, and they're completely separate fisheries from the main creek. So we have Sullivan Slough and what we call the Lower Slough, and those are very, very calabatus rich, and you can go fish and target those fish with calabatus dry flies even when there's no hatch on. You can look for cruising fish in very shallow water and big fish, and mostly all rainbows, and you can drop calabatus on their head and try and get them to come up and eat, and kind of while you're doing that, check back in on the river every now and then to see if the hatches have started.
Backing up a bit, we got another question on the internet from Treg in Moscow. Can you use pontoon boats?
You can use a pontoon boat downstream of Highway 20. Pontoon boats are considered boats here by Fish and Game, so you can't fish those upstream.
But it's not wet, right?
But's not wet, correct.
That's an interesting criteria.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, one of our sponsors, Watermaster, I think you're out of the water on that one, too, which is a raft. So, okay. And another question, totally off subject. Phil in California, Kentucky, he says he saw the picture of you with the snook, wants to know what your favorite saltwater fish is to fish for and why.
Oh, gosh, without question, it's big snook. You know, I love permit, and I love baby tarpon, and I love them all, but there is something about those giant snook that just twists my brain. The way I describe it to people, Roger, is you know, when you get a big snook like that, that is the closest you'll ever get to having a fist fight with a fish. I mean, it is a brawl. I mean, they're such structure-oriented fish that
keeping you hook them out of those mangroves. Huh?
They want to get in those mangroves or whatever they can get to so bad, and they're so strong, and you have to have a very solid fighting technique and the right gear, and just everything has to come together to get those things. And honestly, snook may be they'll eat the fly 100 times easier than a permit will, but hunting and finding a giant snook, I think, is harder and rarer than finding a permit. Just because they're everybody's favorite fish to eat in that saltwater environment, and that's the same overseas and in Florida. And so it's to get those big, sizable fish, they're hard to find. If you get that opportunity, if you ever go to a saltwater lodge and the guide says, we have a place for big snook, and you're not sure what a snook is or if you want to do it, go do it.
Yeah, they've always intrigued me, too.
Just wonderful fish.
Yeah. Okay, let's take another quick break here, and then we'll come back, finish up with more strategies and presentation and tactics for Silver Creek. So be right back, folks. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. Okay. So talking still about food and flies, this is a very hard question for you to answer, I know, but maybe you can give some idea. Terry in Portland, Oregon wanted to know, what patterns do you use most? Well, you have about 15 hatches going on, so it gets pretty complex, right?
Yeah. I can tell you we have favorite tires. Renee Harrop obviously isn't not too far away from us in his patterns. He developed for the Henry's Fork, and they work very well on Silver Creek just because they're both kind of that same flatwater fishery. We fish a lot of the Shane Stahl Cup patterns. We really, really like the Hackle Stacker patterns for any of the insects, Calabatus especially, but PMDs, betas. We use that Hackle Stacker pattern a lot, lots of trailing shuck patterns. Ken Morris does a lot of great patterns that really work well on Spring Creek, especially kind of some of your hoppers and your mice and things like that. If I had to fish these mayfly hatches with one fly, it would definitely be that Hackle Stacker. These fish really like, when you're fishing the hatches, they really want to see that fly sitting on its hackle tips. The higher and drier your fly is sitting, the better you're going to do. You're going to get more takes. We use a lot of the fly floats, the powders and the shakes for frogs, fanny, things like that. We use that very liberally on the creek during the hatches for that reason, to keep those flies up on their hackle tips.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so there's a critical piece of information.
Yeah, you want to show the fish the fly here, you just don't want them to see too much of it.
Yeah, so how critical is matching the hatch on the river? I mean, as far as size, color?
It is important. It definitely takes a backseat to presentation. Your fly choice is important, getting the size and the color right, but definitely pales in comparison to presentation for me. But you can definitely early season, you can go up a size and get away with it for a little bit, and then as we get later in the year, it's almost better to go down a size.
And what makes Silver Creek so hard to fish? What is
the hardest thing about it, Roger, is just the volume of currents. You look across the river and it's one big flowing current, but then we get all these micro currents. And you know, on any given stretch of river, you could have 100 different current speeds from bank to bank. And the fish will line up in the channels. There's a lot of aquatic vegetation, and they'll line up in the channels between the weed beds or very tight to the bank where the water's moving very slow. And you need to present that fly flawlessly. I mean, talk about a dead drift. You have to have a dead drift. You start moving your flyer a little bit, or they see a twitch, and then it goes onto a dead drift, you're probably not going to get a take. The dead drift here is so, so important.
Is there any tricks to doing that in a complex current environment?
Yeah. My mantra is next bug in line. Be the next bug in line. You know, when these fish are up on these hatches and they're eating, they definitely get themselves into a rhythm. And the best thing you could do is get over a target and watch that fish and get that rhythm and try to time your presentation so that you're the next bug in line. You know, without question, Roger, the number one mistake I see on Silver Creek, and it's been happening for decades, is this preconceived idea that because it's Silver Creek and because it's such a technical fishery, you have to drop your fly 12 feet above the fish and let it drift all the way down to where that fish is. Well, nobody can do that. Nobody can get a drag-free drift for 12 feet on Silver Creek. I can't. Nobody can. It just can't be done. There's too much of that microcurrent in there. So casting downstream, casting across the river, never really upstream at these fish, and presenting that fly flawlessly inches from that rising fish's nose. And that's really what gets it done out here during the hatches.
So would you say 80% of the time you're targeting a specific fish, sight fishing to a fish?
I would, shy of hopper fishing, 100% of the time.
100% of the time.
I'm targeting specific fish, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so that based upon what you just described, in my mind, I'm seeing that I've got to be a very accurate caster, putting it down softly, maybe letting it float for 3 or 4 feet over a fish and then bringing it back up.
Yep, picking it up quietly, and yeah, war of attrition sometimes.
Yeah, interesting. What about stealth mode? I mean, is this a place where everybody's crawling through the bushes on the side of the bank?
Not enough people, Roger.
Not enough people.
Not enough people. You know, yes, when I approach these fish, if I have a fish rising in that river, I don't care if he's on the bank or out in the middle, wherever he is, I am almost always on my hands and knees, crawling up to the bank through the grass and getting myself settled on the edge of the bank with a little bit of grass in front of me as a blind. Basically, you're creating a fish blind, and I'm trying to position myself just slightly upstream of that fish, and it does matter, without question. It makes a difference. Probably more than anything, though, is the walking on the bank. The vibration. Silver Creek is notorious for undercut banks. There's sections of this river where you'll be standing there and your buddy will walk up to you and you'll feel him walking from 25 feet away. You'll feel the ground moving. And you know those fish can feel that. So by crawling up there, you know, going into that stealth mode, you're also forcing yourself to go slower and you're taking that vibration out of the equation. And same can be said when you're wade fishing, you know, not getting in the water and pushing waves over these fish, you know, alerting them to your presence, you know, getting in the river and really approaching these fish very slowly. If it took you 20 minutes to approach one fish in this river, I wouldn't balk. I would say good job. You know, just take your own sweet time. It's very easy, especially for the first-time angler on Silver Creek, to see a great big fish rising out in the middle of the river and just to walk straight up to the edge of the bank on that fish, and he'll go down. The good news is in Silver Creek, when we have big prolific catches, the fish will come back up. So even if you mess a fish up, if you put a fish down with your cast, you push a wave over a fish, or he hears your vibration, you'll know. They generally stop rising, but they generally stay put, and you can see them sitting there, and it's just a matter of waiting them out until they feel comfortable again, start beating again.
What's your, you know, let's say I come out there, it's my first time on Silver Creek, and we're getting in the truck and we're headed over there. What's your pep talk to me going to be like? What are you going to tell me? What do I need to know before I even get there?
I'm going to tell you to dress in appropriate colors, dulled down colors. I always express to people to really fish at the pace of the fish they're fishing to. If a fish rises twice and you threw seven casts, you're being a little too aggressive. To really get in tune with the pace of the fish and the speed of the river and try and get yourself adjusted to that. You do everything on Silver Creek half the speed you do it anywhere else. And the slower you go, the more patient you are, the bigger your reward every time.
So it's kind of a place for old guys to go, maybe, huh?
It's a very user-friendly river, Roger. It's very user-friendly. There's places where you can get in on, yes, there's a lot of silt, but there's places where you can get in on a hard gravel bottom and not have a big, heavy current pushing against you, and you can challenge yourself all day and hardly take 10 steps. You get there on the right day. People talk about fishing pressure on Silver Creek. There's lots of people, but the nature of this river, we don't move around a lot. You get to the river, you find a favorite spot, you find some rising fish, and you generally stay put until the hatch is over, and then everybody pretty much backs it up and goes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So with that said, you said, well, fish is the hatch. I'm assuming there's multiple hatches throughout the day, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. Morning and evening are almost always a slam dunk once the season begins. The evening fishery on Silver Creek, I can't tell you how many days in the summer you could come out here on the best spring creek in North America and have it to yourself in the evening. The nature of Sun Valley, people want to go. They want to go to the resort, and they want to go to dinner, or they have a tea time, or they have family with them, and they can't spend the whole day on the river. The evenings on Silver Creek are remarkable. It's the softest light you'll ever see in the world. It's absolutely breathtaking, and you can virtually have the whole place to yourself. Really
yeah,
amazing.
I know we use that strategy down on the San Juan River in New Mexico because of the heat.
Sure.
Summertime, we can get up before the crack of dawn, fish till mid-morning, go back, have lunch, take a nap, then get all suited up and go out and then fish till dark. And that was a really good strategy,
We have an afternoon fishery here, too, with damselflies and ants and beetles and hoppers and calabatus. There's always something to do. You sometimes have to get creative, but you can always find something to cast at here.
Okay. We talked about this before, but I've got the question here from Chuck in Sacramento again about nymphing. What I got from you before, and just to make sure I got it straight, you basically said that if, you're kind of wasting your time doing the nymphing and you could be putting fish down because of it.
I don't want to say wasting your time. It's a personal choice, how people want to approach it. I can tell you that soft hackles and, traditional grease line nymphing techniques are more popular on Silver Creek than, say, throwing a hopper dropper or using an indicator. The soft hackle, fishing a soft hackle can be very rewarding on this creek, and it can be a way to make it a little bit easier, especially for that beginner. And it's not uncommon for us to go out and attempt the dry fly thing, and we see the hatches dwindling down, maybe the guides will put on a soft tackle and try and get people hooked up, and it's a little easier technique, but there's still technique to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a question came in on the internet about Terry from Portland, Oregon wanted to know about do dry fly droppers work at all here?
Shout out to Rip City, my hometown. Do they work? Yes, they work. The biggest problem, you know, with the hopper dropper situation is if you're going to fish the hopper, you need to be as tight to the bank as you can be. And having an 18-inch dropper next underneath your hopper means your hopper is generally going to end up 18 to 12 inches off the bank. A lot of these large browns are sitting under these undercut banks, and it's the sound of the hopper splatting right next to that grass or under the grass that gets them to come out from under the bank and get your fly. So putting that hopper, putting a dropper underneath your hopper, you can't get the hopper close enough to the bank. And subsequently, you know, there's all the oxygen in the water in Silver Creek is created by the weed growth. You know, there aren't rapids and riffles in the river, so the oxygen is created by the plant life. So the plant life gets thick, and you can put a dropper on and spend a lot of time setting your hook on weeds. So
the best thing is just keep that hopper on by itself and use that.
Absolutely. And target those big.
The bank yeah. can.
Absolutely, and if you really want a nymph, you're just better off throwing a soft tackle because you can keep it off the bottom. You can change the speed of that soft tackle coming across the current and keep it where you want it in the water column.
Yeah. This is another question from online, Phil in Kentucky. He says, it sounds like the trout in Silver Creek have advanced degrees in hook avoidance. What happens when someone who fly fishes for warm water fish saltwater fish comes to Silver Creek to try and catch trout?
That's when we really encourage soft rod. I
no strip, you know, striking.
Anecdotally, I spent a day with a kid. He was from Texas. I think it was his high school graduation present. His father bought him a guide trip out on the creek, and he had never fished for trout. He had fly fished plenty, but never for trout, and he had done a lot of bass and panfish, and he was 100% great until it came to the hook set, and he just could not stop grabbing the rod with both hands and hauling it over his left shoulder as hard as he could. And it was just, it was instinctual and reactionary for him, and he fought it and fought it and fought it, and the last fish of the morning, he gently raised the rod and set the hook. On Silver Creek, we don't, it's not even a traditional hook set like you'd have on a normal freestone stream or a tailwater. On Silver Creek, we do what's called the Silver Creek lift. So when the fish eats your fly, these flies are tiny that we're fishing to this fish, and the fisher, if you can convince them to eat it to begin with, they're fooled. They're not going to spit it right away. When we set the hook, we do what's called the Silver Creek lift, and basically we just gently lift the rod up over our head like we're showing it to somebody across the river, like, oh, here's my rod. And you just lift it gently over your head until the line comes tight and give them a little nudge, and off you go.
It's interesting, all these different hook sets, you know.
It's a very nuanced river, for sure.
It's like, you know, in Belize, and you're fishing for permit, and there was a sign, I was just interviewing John Ulch,
got
this two-volume set on permit, but he had a picture in there, I can't remember what he said exactly, but to paraphrase it, there was a sign at one of the lodges as a Thou, you know, kind of like, thou shalt not do a trout hook set for permit, you know.
And yep.
It's like, every fish, every place has their own set of rules,
yep.
And you better follow them if you want to get hooked up, basically.
That's what I call the curse of the migratory angler, Roger.
Yeah. You gotta think about where you are, what you're doing. I don't know. What about the snook? That's probably a strip strike too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And snook, generally they're on it so hard.
You got to
make sure they get their mouth closed on it. So
kind of like
their mouth, but they inhale
like a largemouth bass, right?
Yeah, they eat like a largemouth bass. They suck it into their mouth. Yeah.
Yeah, don't screw around, you know.
Exactly.
So let's talk about. We've got a couple of questions online here. One from Phil again, wanting to know about catching big browns, fishing streamers or mouse patterns. And then Amy in Boise says, nighttime mouse fishing. Share some of your specific suggestions regarding timing, locations, in parentheses, be precise, and any tactics and techniques that you might prove beneficial to the angler.
Uh-huh. Well, you want to fish on June 13th at exactly 10 p.m. under the full moon, Roger. No, right, it's not
the,
that exact.
On the left side of the bank.
Yeah.
Oh, we lost our signal there, John. Sorry, Amy. He said it, but we couldn't hear it.
No, the mouse fishing on Silver Creek, you can do it pretty much year round. You can even there's a small group of individuals that do it in the winter time. Obviously, the fishing has to be open. The nice thing about fishing in Idaho is we can fish at nighttime by law. So there's some states you can't do that in. So it does open up a unique fishery for us. As far as where to fish a mouse, you can fish the river top to bottom. We certainly encourage people to target the deeper areas, cut banks. First-time mouse anglers on Silver Creek, we always encourage them to start in the evening hours and get a lay of the land. You know, there's plenty of muskrat holes out there and moose and all kinds of mayhem out there at night, so you want to have a lay of the land. You want to know where you are. You want to know where you are in relation to your vehicle. And whether you're floating or walking, waiting, you want to have a good headlamp and make sure your batteries are fresh. And we oftentimes, if it's cold, sometimes we'll just drive from one bridge to the next bridge to the next bridge and hit all those spots. Sometimes we'll get in float tubes in the S-turns and come down through the S-turns at night with mouse flies. I can tell you that even though we do it year-round, the peak of the mouse fishing takes place just as the browns are beginning their spawning run. So late summer, early fall, September, October, you know, our favorite month of September, that is kind of prime time mouse fishing because they're moving up. There's fish coming up out of the desert reaches, and they're big, and they are aggressive. They are looking to put weight on before they start spawning, and they're generally displaced fish. They're fish that are moving up through the system. They're maybe not all that familiar with where they're at, so they're going to eat opportunistically.
Yeah. Do you guys put on any kind of a filter on your headlamp?
No, we turn and face the other way.
Keep it away from the river, but
yeah,
you know, just walking purposes.
The headlamp is for walking and not tying. I will tell you a story. It's anecdotal again, but I very much remember watching people spotlighting a brown trout from one of the bridges, and I walked up and said, "That's a bad idea. That's not going to work." And 2 minutes later, somebody threw a mouse through there in the spotlight, and the fish came up and ate it. So just when you think you understand everything there is to understand about fly fishing, guess again. Somebody's going to give you a lesson whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
So, and I have a friend, Max Bloom. Max comes and fishes the brown drakes every year, and he's notorious for late in the hatch putting his mouse fly on and showing the mouse to fish that are rising to the brown drakes at night. And he catches them. He gets them good. He gets some big fish. So, yeah.
Well, that's when those big browns come out.
Absolutely. Yeah, he knows to target them. During, you know, he knows the drake will get them out, and he can get them to indulge on a mouse.
Yeah. But we're coming close to the end here. John, is there any other things you'd like to tell us about Silver Creek that we need to know that we haven't covered?
I will tell you this, Roger, and this has come from our experience with the brown drakes. You know, the brown drake, we don't have, like I said, a lot of river miles here. The brown drake is a major hatch, and people come from all over to fish it. We have people that will come the 2 hours from Boise after work to fish it, turn around and go back, go to bed, and go to work the next day. It's a big deal, and it brings so many people that we end up shoulder-to-shoulder fishing here. And what Peekaboo Angler has really strived to do is really just promote that whole sense of peace and love in our sport and get away from, you know, you walk into our fly shop, I will tell you right now, we do not keep a secret. If you want to know something, we're going to tell you that. Where we've been, I'll tell you what I did yesterday, I'll show you what fly I used and where I stood. Because we want people to really enjoy this. There's no room in this sport for contentious behavior, people giving each other a hard time. This is a sport where, and I wrote this in the foreword to my book, Lessons of Fairchild's Creek, Roger, where if you stop and take a step back and look at us adults as fly anglers, what are we doing? We are collecting bugs. We are playing in the water with our waders. We are playing in boats. We're acting like children. We sometimes get technical about it. We we like to talk about soft rods and hackle stackers and, and give Latin names to insects, but the fact of the matter is we're there to play. We're there to have fun. And so who are we to deny anybody else's fun? We should encourage that fun. So what we do here at Peekaboo Angler on Silver Creek is we try to promote that sense of brotherhood and sisterhood of the fly rod here. And we want people to go to the river and not be intimidated by the angler upstream or downstream. We want them to think that if I'm struggling, this guy downstream that's catching fish might come up here and help me. Mm-hmm. He'll give you some flies. He'll give you his spot or her spot. And we really, really, really work hard here to promote that camaraderie in fly fishing. That's what this sport should be about. And we want Silver Creek to be the epicenter of that so that people aren't intimidated to come here, that they can come here and know that their fellow anglers have their back. And that's really the point of pride for us.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I remember the first time I fished the bighorn in Montana, I was definitely intimidated by that piece of water. I'd never fished a river like that. And I remember standing out there one morning, you know, tying on a fly and so forth and so on, and trying to make some casts and so forth. And evidently, I was really, you know, not doing anything right. Because this guy came over and he said, I don't know his name to this day, but he said, let me help you out here. He says, it looks like this is new to you. And he helped me with tying flies on. He helped me with the casts and where to cast to. And I talked to him for a while. And he was probably a pretty wealthy guy, but traveling around in a Subaru wagon, sleeping in the back, just fishing his way across the country. You know, and sure. But he did just what you said. He took time out, came over to the guy that didn't know what he was doing at the time, and helped me out. And I still remember that day because of his help and his kindness.
The guy traded a couple of fish to give you a lifetime memory. Who wouldn't want to do that? And he's going to remember that too.
So
we all want to be that guy.
Yeah. So that is definitely the way the sport should be.
Absolutely.
Well, good. We got to wrap it up here, and stick with me here, John, because we're going to give away your book.
Absolutely.
And why don't you, we're also going to be giving away a membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Drill, but tell us a little bit about your book.
Lessons of Fairsides Creek?
Yeah.
So Lessons of Fairsides Creek is primarily a how-to, but it is written as a piece of fiction. It is about a gentleman that's trying to catch one particularly large fish and basically struggling to catch that fish and having a friend help him work through the problems. So each chapter presents a different technique or a problem that an angler might have had that is subsequently corrected and how to correct it. But I didn't want to write a pure how-to book, so I wrote it in story form. And just made it a little more easy and fun, enjoyable read. And it's not based on any one particular river. It's just kind of a conglomerate of all the rivers I've ever fished in my life, and I just kind of wove them all together into this fictitious creek called Fair-Sized Creek and really just did my best to help anglers, trout anglers specifically, think outside of the box and try to teach riddle solving as much as technique.
Yeah. Good. And you can get that for all the people except one person that's going to win that tonight. Get that on Amazon, I take it, John? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. Most bookstores carry that, yep.
Okay, good. Well, we'll be right back to give away those prizes in just a moment. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet, and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The pebble mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may also be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry has united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit SaveBristolBay.org. SaveBristolBay.org, and there you'll learn more about how you can get involved. And in fact, I received an email today from the organization saying they're even more concerned now than ever because of the changes that are expected with EPA in Washington and so forth. So if you've ever fished Alaska, any kind of wilderness area, take a look, see if you can help out, and go to the website and check it out. Appreciate it. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what do you think of this show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. But now it's time to give away a few prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do for the next show so you don't miss out on any of the incredible prizes we give away. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your prize. So the first thing we'll be giving away is a one-year membership to the International Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you want to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And let me fire up my database here and get us a winner. It's going to be Douglas Little in Washington. So Douglas Little in Washington. And congratulations, Douglas, on winning that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And let's see here. Get the next one going. And our winner for the one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal from Amato Books. If you don't know about Amato Books, check them out, amatobooks.com. They have several periodicals on fly fishing as well as just a boatload of great books on fly fishing as well. So a great publisher to be acquainted with. So we have our winner there is Bill Ratliff. Bill Ratliff in Idaho. There we go. Somebody's listening in from Idaho tonight. So good for him. Congratulations, Bill. And then now we'll give away a copy of John's book, Lessons of Fair-Sized Creek, 12 Ways to Catch More Chow in the Fly. And as John just described, it sounds like a great read. The question here is, clear my cue. Now, the way you answer this is if you're new to ask about fly fishing, go to our homepage, that question box where you could ask questions during the show. You can use that to ask to answer your question. The first person that answers it correctly wins the book. Simple as that. And the question is, it's two parts. What weight rod does John primarily use on Silver Creek, and what attribute of that rod is super important to him? So two-part question. Okay, what is the weight of the rod, and what attribute of that rod is super important to him? So John, now I'm here just clicking away and trying to get myself a answer. Nothing's come in yet. Sometimes this thing lags behind. No, I don't think this is. Hold on. This is. I think this might be the answer. Or I got from Peter and Fernie, I guess. Four weight soft rod. Is that the right answer, John?
Spot on.
Okay.
Absolutely. Every time.
So Peter, and we've got a bunch of others coming in here. Treg got the right answer. Jim got the right answer. Phil got the right answer. So there's a bunch of people coming right in right behind. So Peter, congratulations on winning that book. I'm not sure if Fernie is your last name or that's where you live. Send me in the same text box, send me your full name and your full mailing address so that John could send that book out to you. And we'll get that on its way. So congrats and thanks everybody for playing and thanks for listening in tonight. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely, Roger. Thanks for having me. I appreciate people like yourself that are getting the word about fly fishing out there and just making it easier for people.
We've created, thank you for that. It's been over 10 years now I've been doing this, which just seems like yesterday when we started, and, close to 250 shows now, quite the library, and historically, too. In fact, there's been a few few people I've interviewed that have now passed away, and we have them recorded, it's great that we were able to do that at the time, so.
Well, once I started telling people that I was going to do this, I was amazed, pleasantly amazed how many people are like, yes, I subscribe to that.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
Yes.
Good.
So many of my friends
spread the word.
For years, yes. So
yeah, spread the good word. Well, our next broadcast will be on March 15th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, and we're going to be interviewing Zach Lazzeri. And our topic for the show will be Want to Be a Fly Fishing Guide. Zach worked as a professional guide for over 10 years in places like Colorado, Montana, Alaska, and Patagonia. So if you've always wanted to know about what it's like to be a guide, tune into this show. Zach will give you the inside scoop on getting your first job, living like a guide, great times you will have, and the not-so-great times you might have. So tune in, and we'd love to have you on the next show. We'd also like to thank the International Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Tarpon Key Lodge, Watermaster, and Royal Gorge Anglers for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.